jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the pre-round three Supercoach Coach podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
Good to be back, mate. Excited to get into it today.
It's the all-important pre-price change show. We've got 2 weeks of additional information to contextualize our, you know, pre-season thoughts, Mark, and now's the time to pull the trigger and be a bit more aggressive. Although, you know, a lot of us will turn to have issues to actually fix, it's also an opportunity to maybe go hard on some value plays that we hadn't considered in pre-season.
Yeah, I think I'm more of the fixing variety at the moment.
Me too, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I had trade Libba out.
Yeah, look, Libba, that's kind of ruined the start of my season, made it really, really difficult for my structure to work and for me to really just be fixing little problems or making aggressive moves, like you say. So he was really good on the weekend, though, Libba. Stood in as Dusty captain and Nick Holman came on the ground for him. So I was pretty impressed with his performance this week. He sort of made up a little bit for round one. But it's a tricky price point to be dealing with in the midfield. So that's sort of dominating my thinking this week.
Yeah, especially because he was in such a unique price bracket. You had Cogs and you had Libba at that sort of price tag where they're returning from injury and present value as an ultra premium, as a 110 plus averaging premium. And because we both had Cogs, like, there's not much room to move. You're either downgrading and leaving 100K sitting around and you don't have money to upgrade to a true premium. So
Yeah, the good thing is that a few of those dual position players do allow you to trade into another position on the ground.
Sure do, and I'm sure we'll both be correcting him this week. So before we get into the actual show, a quick highlight of what we're going to go through for this show. We're going to discuss, first up, the players that have been injured. Then we're going to look at the rookies, and then the trade-outs followed by the trade-in. So we've got so many questions, and this is one of the most massive weeks from a Supercoach trading point of view. So we won't get the chance to answer absolutely everything. We're going through mostly the core players that we've already recommended or that most people have selected that will dominate a majority of this week's thinking, as opposed to some of the more niche players. And unfortunately, we just can't get to them all this week, Mark.
Yeah, lots to get to, mate. So let's get into it. I did notice something on the weekend, mate. After just two rounds, we have six of the top seven leagues and all of the top five leagues in the 18-man league rankings.
Yeah, that's absolutely massive. I think 13 of the top 20 overall, which is huge. And a big shout out to our Patreons. We have six Patreon leagues sitting in the top 20, which is huge.
Crushing it.
Why don't we go around with our personal update, Mark, and then maybe you do a quick team review.
Okay, so I completely sucked round one. As you mentioned on the show last week, I had Libba to deal with and I had Fife as captain because I didn't have a non-playing player. So I was ranked about 25,000. This week scored 2398 and I'm now ranked 7,199. So towards the pointy end and puts me in a position to at least fight for a top 1,000 spot, which is all right. My team is, I went with Laird, Savage, Sicily, then five rookies, Dodie, Murray, Finlayson, Norton, and Murphy. In the middle, I went with Dusty, Fife, Parker, Cripps, Coniglio, then I had Libba, then rookies, so Brayshaw, Kelly, Banfield, Barry, and Holman. The late change that I sort of made there was Titch out and Libba in and added an extra premium into my forward line, so kind of regretting that in hindsight, and it kind of sucks because, I mean, I know that Titch has gone crazy, but never really got to see whether my plan could work just as well with Libba going down with an injury. In the rucks, I went the same as you, Goldstein, Gorn, and your boy Timmy English. In the forward line, Heaney, Billings, Dev Smith, Petrarca, Caddy is a bit of a unique, Christensen, and then Fritch and Giles Langdon. So what you'll notice there is 16 potential premiums there, over 400,000, plus Christensen, no forward rookies at all. Yeah, just really limited exposure to rookies on the ground is sort of the structure that my team went with. Thinking about possibly restructuring a little bit this week.
I scored 23.45, so you beat me this week, Mark, and that put me with a season rank of 9,663. So considering, you know, no Libba the first 2 weeks, I'm pretty happy about that and still happy with the structure. I'm happy I took in three backline rookies and Bonner. Libba's just the only pain point. If I could have swapped him to a primo forward, then all happy there. But Dalhouse probably the major letdown in the team for the week with a 51.
Can't say I was disappointed to see him sucking it on the weekend.
Yeah. And quite a few of the forward line premiums have worked out, so it makes it extra painful. And we'll get to some of those players a bit later on. So even though we are sort of sucking on the pain of Libba, Mark, it seems like the community as a whole is roaring, which is great news because we do take extreme pride in this.
Our advice is great, if only we could follow it.
Yeah, I try and dodge your advice and you try and dodge my advice. And everybody else gets the benefit of a nice blend between the two, maybe.
That's probably right.
All right, so let's go on to the actual show now, Mark. The first thing that I want to discuss before we jump into the questions is just pre-price change trade strategy. Like, if you just had to start with generic advice, what is the aim of the game this week? How would you describe that?
The primary goal should be the same as the primary goal of this whole game, which is get more points, make more money. Really, the number one aim for this week has to be to correct to rookie that is going to be making you a lot of cash if there's one that you don't have. And the probably next consideration would be to fix any real issues with your structure. Like if you had three rookies on the ground up forward, you'd probably want to try and find a way to fix that. And the other thing is, which is probably something that's come into the game more over the last few years, and that's swapping a premium that or one of the gambles that you took that doesn't seem to be working out, or they've got a different role than what you expected. And I'm sure we'll get on to talking to some players in that situation as the show goes on.
I think you've classified it perfectly there, Mark. And I think the first two almost go hand in hand. To me, structuring up your team is the number one goal of the week. And that is predominantly around the key rookies that you may or may not have, and also potential standout mid prices. So that's the number one goal. And then secondly, to fix up any issues that you might have. I don't think this is the week necessarily to target premiums that have started with a bang. If anything, it's to look for value that you have otherwise missed out on because you were too tentative in the preseason. If you take that general approach with your team, it should make your decision-making a little bit easier. Do want to emphasize, it's very tempting to sort of sideswap premiums and just try and trade up in terms of underperforming premium to a slightly better performing premium. But the best way you can actually use your trades to restructure, trade in rookies, to trade out problems, that's what you should be targeting first.
Yeah, look, I think that one thing that I'm hearing from a few people this season is that they don't have as many of the problems. Like the rookies preseason were probably more obvious than they have been in previous years. So we've all sort of got pretty much the same rookies. And there's probably not as many problem players that you're going to need to get rid of. So it might be a season where, because of those factors, people can just be that bit more aggressive with premiums this year.
It does take us to this question here from Jamie Hall, who says, you know, he doesn't have danger, but still pumping out 2300s. Should he hold trades because there's no glaring issues in his team?
Mm.
Or should he get trading? And to that end, I think, you know, that's actually a pretty good option. There have been times in the past where I've traded in this pre-price change week, and it's ended up being worse for my team in the long run because I ended up trading out sort of the weakest links in my team, but comparatively, there were still reasonable picks. And instead, I side-swapped to players that had a hot run of form for 2 weeks and actually created problems for myself.
Yeah.
So I do understand what you're saying, Mark. It's a good opportunity to be aggressive, but at the same time, there's no need to be aggressive for the sake of it. And sometimes not making a trade is, you know, in itself a good move. If everybody else is making a trade this week or two trades this week, by not trading, you have one up your sleeve later down the track.
Yeah, and I think that what we might have learned in the last couple of years and is that you probably just want to make sure that you're not using that extra trade too late in the season. Like, it's not leaving you with an extra trade in round 23. It's sort of, it's something that maybe you're using round 5 or 6, or two trades that you're using in 4, 5, and 6 that you wouldn't have used previously. I don't think I've ever gone into the round 3 without using at least one and probably both of my trades. Right or wrongly, I think that I've used two trades every single year that I've ever played.
With that, let's move into the actual questions, Mark. We'll start off with the players affected by injury first up. So the first question here is from Roger Brook. He is a Patreon, and he's got Matty Crouch and is needing to trade. Crouch is out for, I think, at least 3 weeks with a hammy. He's got enough money to go to either Dusty or Mitchell. Who would you take in that situation? Right. And Emily has a follow-up question to that that I thought we could lump in together. She is thinking about Titch as well, but is also thinking about potentially going to Danger in one round. So I guess to start out with, Matty Crouch, I'm assuming most people wouldn't have all three of Dusty, Mitchell, and Danger.
Yeah.
They're basically the holy scoring trinity in Supercoach at the moment. Would you be trading to those players this week?
Yeah, I guess it kind of depends on the cash situation, because getting from Crouch to Danger is not something that comes easy, and you might have to make compromises in the rest of your team. So that one is probably not obvious, but if you can get there in one trade, yeah, definitely, I would be very interested in doing that. I know Danger was brilliant at times on Monday. I'm still not totally convinced that his value at 750,000. Like, I could think he's so expensive that you can probably live without him for a bit while he comes back in. And with Ablett and Selwood clearly playing really well and taking points, I just can't see him averaging 130 plus in the current way that Geelong is set up. But the other two, if you don't have them, yeah, I'd be fighting pretty hard to get them in. And I don't have Titch, and definitely strong consideration for me this week potentially bringing him in.
I'm guessing you have Dusty first and Titch second?
Yes, yep. Dusty just seems incredibly effective with his possessions. Like, Titch is getting 40, 50 touches, and he's doing enough with the ball, and there's a lot of contested possessions there. But Dusty's just hit that sort of the Dangerfield level of, and that's sort of the Ablett level of, every single time they touch the ball, they're just kicking it effectively, hitting targets, getting an inside 50 that leads to a score involvement. Like, just that real classic super coach heavy scoring way of playing. So yeah, Dusty ahead for me.
And then I'm guessing you have some other blokes ahead of Danger then, based on what you just said. And I think I'd agree with that.
Yeah, just because I think you're stretching a lot with the money to get to him. If Danger was 650, I'd have him right up there with the other two.
All right, so I had some of these players in the trade-in section, but I think now that we're talking about midfield, it actually makes a bit of sense to include them now. One of the questions is, if you don't have Coniglio, is he a must? And that question came from MD via Twitter. Seems to have even more relevance now that Scully is set for an extended spell. Cogs won 24.5 from his first two games, 450,000. If you're not going for one of those two, you'd go for him. I might even go, if you didn't have Cogs, he might even be ahead of Mitchell for mine.
Yeah, wow, that's a massive call. I'm pretty sure you didn't even know who he was until I raised him in the preseason. He has looked awesome. Started pretty slowly on the weekend, but just massive in that last quarter with a couple of goals. The problem with Cogs is that he is quite injury prone with the ankle, so I don't think that you really want to be paying too much for him. So that's why 450 is a really good price to be getting him in. You've already missed two of his good scores, which is a bit tricky. I don't expect him to average 125 from here. But at that price, if he stays fit for even 12 rounds, he does seem like he's going to be a very, very important player this season. And I can see why you would have him ahead of Mitchell, because, I mean, even if Mitchell keeps scoring 150s, he's not going to, like, go up 150,000 like Cogs.
He's priced literally 200K more. Like, it's significant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cripps at 537, is he in that same bracket?
Oh, yeah. See, that's closer. I think that Cripps would be more of a must-have than Titch this year because of value and price. As long as he can stay fit, that is. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, look, I didn't start Titch, right? So I think I'm somewhat biased in my view.
Okay, yeah, and I didn't either.
I just say that as a caveat, right? Yeah. So I'm sure the people who have Titch are just loving it. Yeah. You got 50 disposals and 40 and kick two, so we might seem like nuff-nuffs, but... okay, so apart from them, like, assuming you have Cripps, you have Cogs, you have Mitchell and Martin, which not everyone would have, but there's quite a few in our community that do have that. And when we picked our Patreon team, Mark, all four of those blokes were in our team.
Smart.
So, yeah, if you did have all four of those players, then that next rank that you'd be looking at, probably the front runners are Selwood, Parker, Oliver. And we got that exact question from Elijah via our Patreon question thread. So thoughts on the three of those? And is there anybody I'm missing out? But in terms of top scoring potential, yeah, I think currently the three of them are smashing out 130s at the moment.
There probably is someone you're missing out. Oliver just seems like he could definitely go to another level and just stay there. I guess that the query on him preseason was that he picked up some sort of a knee injury, and I have seen him be treated during games over the first couple of weeks, so that probably just worries me a little bit. But if I had Crouch. He's basically a sideswap to Oliver. I wouldn't hesitate really to do that. Like, Oliver seems very, very likely to score well if he can stay injury free. Selwood versus Parker, that's an interesting question, mate. Preseason, we came down on different sides of that question. I presume that we still come down on different sides. You sticking with Selwood, me thinking Parker's the way to go. Parker was completely dominated round one and was doing the same in round two until he got tagged in the second half. And his contested ball winning this year just looks to have gone another level. And I think that there's points there for him in the Sydney midfield. So very happy to have Parker in my team.
I don't think we really need to nut this argument out. No. It's pretty close to the flip of the coin for me. Selwood's got concerns over people stealing points off him, and Parker's got concerns over the tag that maybe Selwood doesn't have. So maybe those are the two arguments that you'd be tossing up, but it's pretty close. I think I agree with you overall that, as much as it pains me to say, Clayton starting with the average he has so far, you know, he could just be an absolute super coach gun, and we continue to underrate him year after year, Mark. So,
well, it's year after year, but he's only in his third season, so that's all right.
Yeah, just 2 years. So we'll move on to the next player that got injured now. This question's from Nick, one of our patrons. He took a punt on Ciaran Byrne, who hasn't quite worked out for the first 2 weeks.
Can you, pronounce his name again? Not even close.
Ciaran? Is that it?
It's closer. It's closer.
How do you pronounce it, mate?
No, I'm happy just to leave you hanging on this one.
I couldn't pronounce Nick's last name as well, so it's not brilliant. Anyway, enough of that. He's out for 4 weeks with a quad as well, so it looks time to trade. Would you downgrade him to a Lachlan Murphy or potentially double trade to get to Bonner? I'm guessing if you have enough cash to side swap to Bonner, he seems like a bit of a no-brainer. Right. In the situation where you don't have cash, would you downgrade to Murphy or actually look to create the cash somewhere else and try and side swap to Bonner?
Yeah, that's a really tricky one. So I'm very happy to have Murphy in my side because he's that basement rookie price. If you can just get 3 more weeks of games, he will make a stack of cash, which is awesome. I guess my concern, like, there's still some concerns over job security going forward. I think that he has done enough the last few weeks to keep his spot in the side for a while. But you just never know. So I'd be a little bit reluctant to bring him in. I don't think he's like one of those obvious correct two rookies. I'd really be looking to get Bonner in. I know it's not a lot more money. Hopefully you could find a way in your team to get Bonner in. Bonner would be number one by a mile.
All right, on to the questions about the rookies now, Mark. First one here is from Craig A., one of our patrons. He's asking about Zach Giles Langdon. So we just got news that he's out for 4 weeks with broken hand or something, which is not ideal. And I mean, this is kind of the key time in the year to be making cash, making value in your team. And so even though there's a good chance he comes back, there's a good chance that he might still break into the team. To me, it seems like a no-brainer that we've kind of got to trade him out.
Yeah, I guess if you've got enough trades and you don't have other priorities, if you don't have Ryan, Giles Langdon to Ryan seems a very obvious trade. And I don't, and that seems super, super obvious for my team, but I may have, I've still got to fix Libos, so that a little bit hamstrung with that one. I guess the other thing is that Giles Langdon could actually be a bit of a blessing in disguise because if you have, say, a rookie on ground and it's Fritch and Ryan or something like that, you can sort of try and use him to loophole the best one of those two, which I think makes having a forward rookie on ground much, much more sustainable going forward. So I guess you'd have to check the schedule and make sure Giles Langdon lands in between those two often enough to make it worthwhile. But yeah, in that situation, like, who are we going to correct to? Venables, Waterman? Like, there's not a heap of options that you're going to be really excited about correcting to. He has a 1 month injury. He may be someone that you can keep if you've got Fritch and Ryan.
I don't know if he's someone that I'd necessarily correct immediately. I think it's somebody that you could trade out next week, but I'd definitely be looking to move him. I understand what you're saying about being able to use him as a loophole player, but this current period of Supercoach is all about generating cash for a frenzied upgrade period. And we often try and start the upgrading process earlier, so we trade out rookies before they're fully priced out. And to me, it's not worth the risk, especially when he returns from injury. He might still not secure a spot in the team. He might be out for longer because he might have to prove form in the knee fall, and then you might need to side swap him out later on when you're in sort of the upgrade swing of things.
Or he might be a downgrade target for someone later on, which is awesome. Yeah. Because like 24 hours ago, I was pretty happy to have him in my team. I didn't have Ryan, which really boo his sucked. But Langdon has done some really good things over the last couple of weeks. And I've been pretty happy to have him there. And I think he was pretty secure in that GWS side. But like you said, he could lose his spot. I don't really like correcting to many of the options that are available at the moment, other than Ryan and Fritsch. There's not really anyone that excites me in that spot.
Maybe let's talk about some of the other trade-in options then while we're at it. I guess before we move past Ryan, Aussie Teron, one of our Patreons, has asked whether or not Ryan is a must-have. In his situation, he's looking to axe somebody who's actually playing at the moment for Ryan. In the situation where you have Langdon, it seems pretty obvious, like you said. But if you didn't, I'm not 100% sure of his must-have status after 1 week.
Didn't he score like 38 in round one or something crazy?
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, he looked, I don't know whether you watched that game, mate, but he looked fantastic. Like, just it wasn't just that he scored really well. He passed the eye test well and truly, and he kicked 3-3 and could have definitely kicked some of those goals. So he could have scored much, much higher. So is he a must-have and can he repeat that week to week? I don't think that he can. I don't think that you'd be relying on him to score hundreds or even average 76, which is his current average. So I don't think he's a must-have, but just because his big score from the weekend will go through the price cycle for a couple of weeks, he should make you a decent amount of money. And I guess it'd be very, very line ball to be trading a playing rookie to him there.
I agree with that. I think the problem with his scoring, I mean, as great as the 115 is in round two before we've had a price movement, is that that's only going to factor for two price cycles. Yet next week, yet the week after next, and then the third week, it's already cycled out of his price. And with two price movements, it's not high enough to see him sort of reach a peak. It helps his acceleration up to that 200K price range, but he's not going to hit 300K within 2 weeks. So the risk with Ryan is that he's got massive scoring potential, but his quiet games as a small forward in the West Coast forward line is also quite weak. So if he has a couple poor weeks coming out and you trade into him, and then he doesn't see a big score for quite a little while yet, sure, he's going to accelerate pretty quickly to that 250K price range, and he might be one of your first trade out targets, but it's not as good as him scoring this after he's already hit 220K and then is using this 115 to spike his price into that 300K range.
He does seem like the sort of player that may have another big game in 3 or 4 weeks, which is what you're sort of talking about. So it's a big gamble, but he does seem very capable of doing something like that.
Just before we move on to the other options for Langdon, Ryan must have, yay or nay, especially if you don't have Langdon.
It's borderline, but I wouldn't say must have.
That's a nay for me, for sure. So let's talk about the other options for Langdon now. So Waterman and Venables, the other two West Coast blokes, would you consider either of those two in Langdon's stead if you already had Ryan?
No, I wouldn't, mate. I'd be holding Langdon and just seeing what happened.
Yeah. Was there any forward rookie that you'd take the risk on?
Other than Ryan, not necessarily. I didn't mind the look of Billy Gowers on the weekend for the Doggies. I'm not sure whether he holds his spot, but and he could have scored a bit higher if he kicked straight. I did think that he added a little bit to their side. There's a good chance Jack Higgins for the Tigers will be named this week, and he may be someone better to fill that spot with a dual position status and the pedigree of scoring well.
How about Garland, right?
Like, he scored two early goals in round one in the first half, and then barely scored after that, and then barely scored in the second game as well. So, nah, not for me, mate. I think he, for a little while there in round one, I thought, gee, looks all right, but it doesn't really interest me much. You?
I guess to me, him and Ryan seem like similar. Like, they've got like impressive athletic traits, but they're not accumulators of the ball. So my worry is just, he looks like he's capable of spiking one big game. And because he's priced 117,000 and he has that mid-forward flexibility, that might make him good enough to trade in.
Okay.
All right, let's talk about some midfield rookies. There are a few more attractive options in there. Probably the two that I want to talk about, one selfishly and one more generally. So first one, Lachlan Fogarty. For Geelong, scored pretty well in the first round, and then the last round wasn't too brilliant. But if he gets named 3 rounds in a row, this was a bloke that was considered a steal at pick 22, and you know, he has scored an 80 so far. So after 117k price tag seems all right. And then the other bloke is a bloke that I passed on because I only ran 4 midfield rooks, and that's John Barry, and we got a question about him from Asinine Mind, whether or not he is a must-have. Hasn't scored brilliantly so far, but has shown enough in flashes to look like he'll go up in value as long as he keeps playing. Do you have either of those two sort of high in contention?
Got Barry in my team. I started him, and I've definitely had a bit close eye on Fogarty because he, based on those junior numbers that you talked about, is super interesting to me. I probably just don't have a spot for him in my team. Out of the two, I'd probably take Barry just because he's mature age. I think that Fogarty will continue to get games and could score quite well. And I haven't been super, super impressed by Barry, but he would be ahead for me. The interesting thing with both of them is that they both seem to have had much better second halves than first halves in both games that they've played. So, and sort of some close games in there on the weekend for both those teams. So I think that the coaches will look well on the fact that they competed when the game was there to be won. I think that just because of the mature age thing, I'd have Barry ahead. But if you're looking for a midfield rookie this week, I think both of them are reasonably okay selections.
All right, we'll move on to the next question about a rook. This one's from Dane Wells, asking whether or not we should be looking to move on rookies like Norton, who don't look like they're going to be scoring enough. And he's also a little bit more expensively priced. So there's a few questions I've lumped in here together. The next one's from Daniel McLean, asking about Brayshaw, and then Jason Chapman asking about Ellis and Rayner. So Corey Ellis and Cam Rayner.
Yeah.
And then I've chucked another one in there, Stephenson for Collingwood. Yeah. So all more expensive, all haven't scored brilliantly for the first two rounds. I mean, you've already invested in them. You don't make a huge amount from downgrading from them. Are these players worth a trade out?
Some of them, yeah. I think that they are. I don't think I'd lump them all into the same category, though. So I have Norton in that bunch. He did some pretty terrible things on the weekend against the Eagles. He kicked it straight over one of his teammates' head to the Eagle. I think it might have been Darling who kicked the goal. It was just super bad. The thing is that the Dogs have got so many injuries that I think his spot should still be there. And I think he showed in the JLT that he has decent games in him. Another player like that is Brayshaw, who also showed in the JLT he has decent games in him. Was a bit better on the weekend and I think has the potential to score quite well. So I'm reasonably okay with having both those guys in there, and I don't think that there's anyone screaming out for me to trade two in those spots. Like, you got to think of who you're trading to. So in defense, if you don't have Dodie, Finlayson, maybe Murray, they might be players that you go to, but really Dodie or Finlayson, like, if you don't have them, you would. But otherwise, like, I guess you could try and use the money to restructure your side if you really needed to. Some of those other boys, though, maybe Alice, Rayner types, I probably would be looking to trade if I could find someone more suitable.
I suppose in the forward line, though, like if you have Ryan and Fritsch, we're running into the same problems. Would you trade Venables or would you trade Waterman? Like, your options aren't brilliant, right?
That's right. So unless you can restructure somehow, or unless that money all of a sudden becomes, like, you can reinvest that money really, really usefully. So say you go Rayner to Venables and you have 100,000 and that can get you from like a really low end premium to a much better premium that's going to score a lot higher over the course of the year, then you're reinvesting that effectively and it might be worth it. But I think like a Corey Ellis down to maybe a Murray or a Murphy type, that's a lot more risky of a selection. You'd sort of try and get Ellis up to someone like Bonner if you could.
All right, we'll move on to now the trade outs, Mark. And the first bloke that we are going to discuss, we got some of the most questions about. First question here is from Charles Hurtsogood. Melbourne's backline looks like a work in progress. Lewis and Lever have been added. Hibbard's getting less intercept marks and less of the release ball. Is this cause enough for correction? So Hibbard was a fairly popular starting pick. It seemed like most people preferred him to Yeo as that sort of premium D2 next to Laird. And Hibbard has not worked out too brilliantly so far. I think I'm going to be fairly biased on this pick because I was more skeptical on the Hibbard selection through the preseason. So to me, that's enough of a concern that I might try and find an opportunistic trade.
Yeah.
What do you think about that,
Mark? Look, and I think that I need to flag that I probably fall into that same camp as well. I think he's still got some really big games in him. He may have a patch of scoring where he goes really, really well this year. I think that one of the reasons I'd be looking to trade him is that there's probably a couple of other options that look really good. So people returning to premium scoring, particularly Simpson. He has looked absolutely brilliant the first 2 weeks, started really slowly this week, but just seems to be getting the Doherty points, and has had a huge season before, only a couple of years ago. He's super durable. I think that if I had Hibbard and not Simpson, and I didn't have like other problems to deal with, I'd be very, very tempted by that trade. And I guess there's Heath Shaw, who I was very skeptical of in the preseason, but does seem to have gotten some points back with Wilson and Williams not there this year. And he's, you get a pretty big discount on starting on bringing him in as well at about 450, I think. So because there are alternatives that I think I would be happy to bring in, I'd be pretty keen to move him on.
A reason that you're more likely to trade him in are the trade-in options all present value. So you could downgrade all the way to Bonner. You could gain some cash by downgrading the Simpson, who looks like he has 5, 10, 15 points of value in him, and Shaw, who looks like he's also potentially got a similar amount. So that makes the equation a little bit easier. If you're just doing a Hibbard to Yo...
Yeah, I wouldn't do that.
That, for example, doesn't look as good, yeah, right? And to me, the value on offer helps mitigate the risk of trading out still a potential premium in Hibbard.
Yeah.
So I would rank them according to price. Bonner first, Shaw second, Simpson third, wow, if I had to rank the three. And they're probably the three top trading options in the back line for the week.
I might rank them in reverse to that.
Next question here is from Theo Antonio. What to do with Sicily? So we just got news fairly late, pretty close to when we started recording. Yeah, suspended for a week, which, I mean, it's very much on the cards for a selection like Sicily. Hot-tempered bloke.
You're just a bloody Selwood lover. Protect my boy Selwood. Oh, he never does anything wrong.
He got kneed in the head, mate. And they're cracking down on indiscretions more this year than they have previously. Like, they've changed the MRP. They're saying it's not impartial of the AFL. We're going to just make the calls that we want. And they're clear that they want to stamp out aggression. So something like that. I mean, in the past would have gone unsuspended potentially, but... Yeah.
Definitely unsuspended in the past. One thing I did love from the NMRP on the weekend was, like, Josh Caddy played the Thursday night game and you knew on Friday that he had been offered a week. Like, having that extra information going through the weekend allowed me to make better decisions, so I was a big fan of that. I saw the incident when it was happening. I thought that Selwood was holding on to Sicily because I just, like, Selwood's dirty ass. But
everyone hates Selwood.
I don't hate him, but... He's an easy player to boot. And but it turned out that there was a good reason why Selwood was holding on to him, because Sicily was kneeing him in the head. Look, Sicily was an interesting case on the weekend because I definitely forgave him for his first half where he scored bugger all because the ball was just never down the Hawks' end. Geelong had like 15 or 20 inside 50s in that first half. The ball was just never there for Sicily to be getting free points, and Geelong certainly were never just bombing the ball in. They were trying to like lower their eyes and hit targets. So and there were times during that game where Sicily maybe did a couple of dumb things, but he also like really used his kicking to his advantage and showed some class there. There was one dropped mark in the back 50 that could have changed his score quite a lot. So look, willing to forgive Sicily for that. Really disappointed that he's got suspended. A frustrating hold and play a crappy rookie, I guess.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think, to your point, Mark, it's about the worst game that you could get from Sicily, like in terms of the game was against him. Geelong had 19 fewer inside 50s for the game and matched Cawthorn in scoring. So, you know, exactly what you said. He didn't get many opportunities for intercepts. And when Geelong did go forward, they didn't just bomb it in. So he didn't even get the chance to intercept. Like the game played out about as poorly as you could expect. That's what happens with the backline premiums. And that's why they're poorer scoring. That consistency is harder to come by. His upside's still pretty good. The week out's frustrating. But that's an extra reason to trade out all your donuts and to use him as a loophole player and to get cash generation on field. So I'd agree. It's as a keep for me as well.
And I think he's got the Sunday game against the Tigers this week. So you should be able to loophole with him a little bit.
Yeah. All right. Next question here is from Adam Pianto. How do we feel about Zorko? Obviously, week one was awful. Mm. Week two barely scraped 100. Being tagged is a real frustration for Zorko, and he's working through it, but probably not to the level that super coaches would hope for. And probably want to introduce another player in a similar conversation because he had a similarly poor round one. Zach Merritt, injured in round one. You'd think being tagged is also a legitimate concern for Merritt moving forward as well. So that both blokes that will have to deal with the tag had poor round ones are going to plummet in price. Would you consider trading either of these two?
I worry why you had a smile in your voice at the end of that sentence. I honestly don't know. I'd probably keep him and just hope that they came good, both of them, to be honest. I mean, Zorko was on 66 at three-quarter time. He was definitely struggling in that game, and just because Brisbane came back, he had a big last quarter and was able to post, like, a reasonable score. I would definitely have worries. I was very keen to start Zach Merritt this year. If it wasn't for the tag, I definitely would have started him, but I expected the tag to come, and it has already, and I expect that it will continue to do so. This is, as a Bomber supporter, we want to get Andy McGrath and Darcy Parrish and a couple of these other boys up and running in the midfield to take a bit of heat off Zach Merritt sometimes, just because teams are going to lock down on him and they do notice a difference. So I could understand going both ways. I don't have them. I don't have to make the decision. It's really hard to make the decision when they're not in my team. Lean towards keeping, though.
I think they both suffer a little bit from the fact that that's really impactful with their disposals compared to their captains. So you've got Beams as Zorko's counterpart, but they seem to tag Zorko instead of Beams. You've got Heppel, but they'll tag Merritt instead of Heppel. And Selwood sort of suffered from that when he was getting tagged ahead of Dangerfield as well. It definitely stifles scoring. I can definitely understand trading them out. If you could use this as an opportunity to restructure, I would. If you're just side-swapping premiums, I'm perhaps a little less interested. I don't know that I'd upgrade to Dangerfield. You know, some of the blokes we talked about before, Cogs if you didn't have him, Cripps if you didn't have him, some of those must-haves, yeah. But in most situations, you'd keep. But it's so team-dependent with these. What are your other issues? Is there opportunity to restructure? Do you have rookies you need to get rid of? It's pretty borderline, unfortunately. So our advice isn't hugely helpful there.
Yeah, I think that in most situations, coaches end up keeping in that spot, and the record of that working out versus not working out is probably pretty even. Sometimes it goes really bad, like Hanbury last year. Sometimes they come good and it works out and they get a spike, a big score, and yeah, it's happy days.
Brody Crouch has asked about Matty Cruiser. If he doesn't play this week,
yeah.
If he does, you obviously hold. If he doesn't, you'd think it's still just another week. As long as you've got cover in English, it's probably the same play as last week.
No, I think that the play is actually different this week because English was so poor last week. Whether he actually even gets a game this week, I think that the expectations of English going into round two were a lot higher than they are going into round three. I think that if he misses this week, I would be concerned about what that injury does for the rest of the year, and I'd probably be trading him out. But I do expect him to play this week, and I don't think you're going to need to make that decision.
I mean, if Cruiser doesn't play this week, you'd assume he still plays next week. So as long as English holds his spot for one more week, I mean, I understand the scoring equation looks, what you're predicting English scores looks a little bit different. But I think in terms of the trade strategy, it's probably still the same.
Yeah, I think that Cruiser to me looks a bit different if he misses this week. It looks like he's got a groin. I don't think he's going to fully recover, like if he needs 2 full weeks off. And I think it'll affect his scoring going forward. So I'd be more inclined to get rid of him.
I mean, he did have an interrupted preseason, which sort of adds to that. All right, next question here is from Michael Briggs Miller, asking whether or not to trade Bont. He doesn't have Coniglio, so we've already talked about him being a fairly obvious one. I think Bont seems like a more likely trade out than Merritt or Zorko. Yeah. Like, you knew the equation with those two because there's issues with the tag and that, but with Bont, it's actually a positional change.
But you knew that as well. Like, I think that you 100% knew at least that part there was some risks involved with the position.
Right, but acknowledging the risk in terms of being tagged as a top midfielder is a lot easier to stomach than changing the amount of percent that you play in the midfield, because that's going to affect your scoring potentially to an even larger degree, especially if your team doesn't do well.
Maybe. I see them as very similar factors to consider.
I guess I differ slightly in that regard. I'd probably trade Bont out first of the three. And I was most likely to start Bont of the three going into it. But if you're going to spend more time playing up forward and your team is in Strugglesville at the moment, it's not a good spot to be in. Whereas,
Look, I think that Bont's scoring relies on him winning them games. Like, that's where most of his points come from, is big last quarters in close games. But they look a long way off getting even close in a game at the moment. We've got them this week. Hopefully they don't recover yet. But yeah, the doggies' form, as much as anything, would be a big worry for me.
Because, I mean, you said that you'd be pretty tempted just to keep Merritt and Zorko in that situation. Yeah. So are you as likely to hold on to Bont?
So I'm saying that with Zorko and Merritt, you knew the tagging was some risk, so you had to factor that in. With Bont, you knew that the positional thing was some risk, so you had to factor that in. I think that the difference here is, the doggies really, really sucking and performing like way below expectations. Whereas you could argue the Lions are performing above expectations and Essendon close to expectations. So I think that that piece of new information may be an overriding factor leading towards more likely to trade out Bond. And I know a lot of his owners are pretty keen to trade him out. And given that there are a bunch of other options, Parker, Selwood, Oliver, Coniglio, Cripps, Mitchell, Dusty, there's plenty of other players that you may want in that spot instead.
Well, like I said, I think I'd be fairly likely to move him. He also doesn't have a very friendly buy round, being around 13 buy player, so it's another additional consideration there. All right, next question is from Mookie. What does he do with Rockliff? I don't want to spend too long on this. We were both not there during the
Gone.
preseason. It's not worked out, so trade him out.
Gone.
We've got another player that's pretty similar to that. This question is from Darren Evans asking about Menegola,
Gone.
and it's pretty much the same equation.
Yeah.
Yeah, gone. So trade those. Both those blokes out. Change in role, change in scoring potential, and that's been realized in
Yep,
round
add
22.
Kelly and Ablett to that midfield, and there's no points for Menegola.
All right, next question from Dave Siddles, another one of our patrons. Mentioned that we liked Armitage. Would you be keeping him if you had no other issues? So it's not been most impressive start from Armo, averaging 78 from his first two games, but I don't know if it's necessarily poor enough to require a trade out, although if you had an opportunity to restructure, I probably would.
Yeah, he looked in the first quarter of the first game against Brisbane, he completely dominated and looked really good. And the Saints were just terrible against North Melbourne. I think that if the Saints had a one, he would have scored all right. Had poor DT to SC conversion. I thought that at times in the game, he actually looked pretty good. I think his scoring has been a bit underwhelming. I'm just not sure who you go to. Like, if O'Meara was just burning it up, you might switch there, but he's not. So I wouldn't hesitate at all to get rid of Armitage if I had him because I was restructuring and getting some money for something else, but I wouldn't be too upset about keeping him either.
Same. O'Meara, is he a bloke that you're more likely to keep?
No, not really. Like, I think that both of them have probably underperformed when it comes to scoring, but both of them have looked reasonably good at times as well. So they may be slow burns. I don't think either of us started a midfield mid-pricer, did we?
No, I think we both started Libba Cogs, but we both didn't
Yeah.
start Armo O'Meara. And I think that goes back to what we were saying in
Yeah.
the preseason. Like those 300K mid-price midfielders rarely burn you unless they're that bleedingly obvious.
Yeah.
If they've got some risk, like even if they fire an average 105, or even if they spike to a certain amount of price, they might not score that consistently to be, yeah, game breakers if you didn't start them. So, yeah.
yeah it takes someone like Oliver last year to like really become like proper elite premium to actually burn you.
So having said that, though, I think both of us would be happy. Like, if we had him, I wouldn't be actively looking to trade them out. But if you needed to upgrade somewhere else and you needed an opportunity to downgrade to get some cash, then they're probably some prime candidates.
Yep.
All right. Next question is from Gary Real asking about Lukey Dalhouse. Clearly down the order now at Western Bulldogs. His role is limited in a disorganized team. Trade out while we can. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. Like, Bulldogs have been getting
Yeah.
smashed. Like, he's actually committed to a fair bit of midfield time, more than some of the other mid forward. They're pretty committed to him, to playing him mostly in the midfield. Just think
Yeah.
Bulldogs are pretty bad at the moment, and that's not helping him. Like, considering the first two games, like 80 and 55 are not awful. Like, if you saw this during the course of a season, it's not terrible. As the first two rounds, it looks awful. But having said that, like, I'm still very tempted to trade him out.
I think after week one, he had 29 touches, and he looked like, especially with Libba going down, I thought, geez, he is probably someone that's actually a good player to have in your team. 29 touches, 88 points. Doggies had a big loss. Like, you'd think that he would get a lot better, and Doggies would win some games and he'd score really well. But obviously, I barely noticed him in the West Coast game. Really, really poor performance. I'm not sure that with Dalhouse, because Dalhouse and McLean are probably interchangeable players in some senses, that you can totally write it down to the Doggies' performance on this one, because McLean's averaged 108 over the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, no, McLean's definitely continued to step up, whereas Dalhouse has not quite done that so far. Having said that, I think that could quite easily flip. Like, Dalhouse, by
Yeah.
all reports, has had a really strong preseason. He's in his contract year, and with Libba going down, like you said, he's going to get more midfield opportunities. Having said that, if Dalhouse is only going to average 95, or 96, 97 for the year and only present a few points of value, you could take the opportunity to trade him out, restructure, or trade to a bloke that has a little bit more value in his starting price tag. I don't know. It's a pretty marginal one. I think I'm being quite emotional wanting to trade him out after a 50. But
yeah,
I think you kind of got to look at the Dogs and go, where do you think they'll finish? Do you think they'll improve or continue to basically suck? If they're going to continue this round of form, then he seems like a pretty obvious trade out. And I'd be wary of trading in even Toby McLean, even though he's been doing well. What do you reckon, Mark? Should I keep him or trade him?
I think you should definitely keep him. That's me being selfish.
Now I'm nervous.
Just because I can barrack against him. It was fun barracking against him on the weekend. Look, to be honest, after round one, when I saw that you had him in your team, that definitely made me nervous. With him having 29 touches and Libba going down, I thought, gee, he may turn out to be a much better selection here. I think he'll probably have a good patch at some stage. I'd be very loath to trade him out if I had him.
Look, I have Libba and Dalhouse being my two more obvious trade-out options, especially with Christensen knocking out a 101. Whoop. With Giles Langdon going down, I'm more likely to trade Libba out to a rookie and trade Langdon up to a premium. So if Langdon didn't go down, there's a good chance I was doing some side swap action there. Nervous, but yeah, you're probably right, Mark. It's pretty sensible advice there. So Blair Dewsbury is asking about Kane Lambert. And we got heaps of questions about Lambert, heaps. And a lot of people called him like a unique player, but the amount of questions that we got about him makes him feel not so unique.
Did we even mention him on the preseason shows?
Yeah, I think we did briefly, but it's a similar story to the Bulldogs, right? Like, they got so many small players that rotate between the midfield and the forward line. Yeah, he's averaging 60 from the first two rounds and looks like a fairly obvious trade out.
Yeah, unfortunately it does. I think that there's some chance that he comes back and has a bit of a run like he did in the back half of last year. But at his price and the fact that there's a whole bunch of other players that are doing reasonably well with a bit of value in the forward line, pretty easy trade out, really.
All right, on to the trade in targets now, last section for the show. This first question here is from one of our patrons, Ben Reed, asking about Christensen and Bonner. Are they both sort of must-haves? Christensen, Mark, I think we'd both be very glad for, and it could not have been a better second week after Tom Bell got dropped as well. And we got some questions saying we had blind faith in Christensen, and this is why, Mark.
Our mate Hawker had Cox and Bell in his starting team. Yeah, both missed round two. I think he's still ranked maybe a little bit higher than me, so I can't really talk. that was a little bit not funny because he's a good mate, but yeah, a bit sad really. Christensen, it's so weird that this question comes up after week one. I was thinking Christensen's definitely out next week. I'd already like worked out my trades. He was like 100% going. And because he's such a great price to be trading out, that's one of the advantages of a mid-pricer is that you can jump off them so quickly and just have no regrets whatsoever. And because you can just make 150K that you can put into someone like Libba. Like, it was just going to solve all my problems. It was awesome. And then in his 100th game, he had to go and score 100.
Boom, boom. Yeah.
Yeah, and sort of played pretty well throughout the entire game and didn't just have a last quarter burst like a lot of the Lions did. I personally wouldn't be trading him in, but moderately happy that I started with him.
Moderately happy?
Huh. Are you more than that?
Oh, definitely. Especially with all the doubt, mate. There's not many people that have as much...
Oh, God. This is going to fall. Go on. Set yourself up. Come on. Build up this massive thing that can fall down.
Look, he's a bloke that wins the inside ball, right? So even if his team's losing, he can still find a way to get the pill, and he tackles a heap. So I'm just happy he's proven himself. Look, I don't think he's a must-have trade in, but I'm happy to have started him. I think the good part about Christensen is if you didn't go with Christensen, you have one of the rookies on field. And after Ryan's 38 last week, not many people would have had his 115 on field. So I think I mentioned in the podcast last week with Dunny, because he was a little bit upset with Christensen. It's structurally, he still works really well for our team. You get slightly higher scoring, but you still get sort of that cash gain that you wouldn't get with a 400K mid-pricer. So he just sits in a nice spot. So I'm happy that he's worked out after round, not worked out, but had a decent round two. He's not a must-have. I wouldn't necessarily trade into him. I just think structurally he sits quite well.
Okay, but Riley Bonner.
I don't know if I'd restructure my team just to bring him in, but if I had a premium I didn't like, or if I had the opportunity to swap Sicily into the forward line, maybe because I wanted to take a rookie off field, then Bonner seems like just one of the better options in terms of restructuring this week. And I suspect he'll go into plenty of teams. Dunny and I pumped him up plenty last week. Like, he wins a fair bit of the ball. He's a great kick, so they try and give it to him.
Yeah.
Pittard's still out for a little bit. It looks like he's consolidated a spot on the team. Like,
yeah.
I don't think I need to say more. Maybe your thoughts on Bonner, Mark, is a less biased one.
Really, really unsure, to be honest. Pittard only 1 to 2 weeks away. I think that they've got a few other defenders that can score quite well. I mean, Hartlett, Burn Jones, Houston, there's a few people competing for points back there for the power team. The fact that they're going to do really well is helpful to him. I think that, I mean, he was sitting on probably 60 heading really late into that game on the weekend and then got what was essentially an extremely lucky goal with a couple of minutes to go, which just really helped his score get it up to a reasonable standard. And I know that at the SCG against a tough team like the Swans, that game wasn't set up for him to score well. But I think that his performance is inflated because of that goal. So I'm really unsure, to be honest, about what to do here. And he is probably a 50-50 chance of coming into my team. It'll be either him or Liam Ryan that comes in this week. And look, some of the questions that I've heard coming out from non-Bonner owners is, like, what would he need to average to actually make him such a great trade-in target? Like, obviously, if you've got him, you're stoked that you started him. But to trade someone in at that 257 price bracket is pretty difficult. You might be side-swapping. You might be downgrading a premium to them. Like, what does he actually have to average for you to go, yep, I won at that, rather than, like, a break-even or whatever? And if he averages 80, I think it's a pretty meh trade. Like, you're not really gaining a lot, even though because you started him and he averages 80, you're really happy with that result.
I think it's a combination, right? Like, it's a combination between scoring and how much he increases in price. So if he averages 80 but spikes at the right time and you trade him out at, you know, 450, 470, you're a lot happier than if he averages well at the start, tapers off a little bit toward when you're trading him out and you only trade him out at 400k. Even if he averages 80 in that instance, you're more likely to see him as a meh pick. So It's a combo, right? Like, what price does he end up at when you trade him out, and how much does he average while he's in your team? I think by most metrics, he's a decent risk to take, but not a must-have.
Yep.
All right. So we've got a few more questions that I want to just lump together to round out the show. The first one's from Pat Villanova asking about Tim Taranto. The next one's from Nick Fisher asking about Zach Fisher. And the last one's from Richie Younger asking about Toby McLean and Devin Smith. So essentially four mid-priced forwards, Fisher being the cheapest, Taranto being the next, Smith being the one that's probably most exposed, and McLean we've mentioned briefly. Taranto's the one that seems like a pretty interesting selection. Like, the same reasons you'd consider McGrath in the back line is why you'd consider Taranto in the forward line. And off his two games so far, looks all right.
Looks really good. Looks better than all right, Taranto. I've got Taranto in draft. Very, very happy to have him in that. I think he's a very... And at the time when I picked him, I thought he's just so well suited to that game as a pick because he's just quite unlikely to really reach premium status and is maybe not cheap enough to be bringing in your side if he doesn't reach premium status. He'd have to, so if, at 350,000, you've got to think that he has to average more than 95, okay? I did a bit of research the other day. I think I came up with about six or seven players in their second season that have averaged more than 95 since about 2008. And so he would have to be a really, really, have an exceptional season. Like, we're talking Selwood, Fife, Oliver type levels of season, right? Dusty Martin, like the freaks of the game, right? So what are the likelihood of him? Yeah, pick two. But Josh Kelly was pick two and he is an absolute gun and he averaged like 75 in his second season. Pendlebury didn't average over 95 in his second season and he is an absolute star. Andy McGrath, love him. He is going to be an absolute superstar of the competition, but I still reckon he's going to struggle to average over 95 this season. Like, getting there in your second year is extremely difficult, right? Is Tim Taranto an absolute gun and could he do it? Yes, I think that he can. The odds on him reaching premium status are still reasonably low based on all that experience of previous years. With Scully going down, there's more of a role at the Giants for him. There is a lot of factors why he could do it. I like him. I would love to have him in my team, but I find it really hard to justify paying that much money for him. If it was 300,000, it'd be different.
I kind of wish like the Taranto McGrath selections were almost like a hybrid between the two. Like, Taranto's great in the sense that he plays for GWS and you think that means he's going to get plenty of opportunities to score. Nothing against Essendon, but I don't know if you're in that sort of same level of consistent performances. Whereas McGrath, although he plays for Essendon, with a few more question marks about their top eight credentials, is available in the back line. If you had Taranto available in the back line playing for GWS, like that'd be a much more attractive selection. But given the way the cards have fallen, like as a forward line selection, and considering how well a lot of the forward premiums are going so far, you're less likely to take the punt, because in the back line, you'll stomach a 90 for McGrath. In Taranto, a 90 is not going to really cut it. You want more 95, like you mentioned, Mark. Zach Fisher, tempted at all?
I had him last year as a rookie, and he was, I think he got injured in maybe the second game, wasn't totally a massive fan. Seems like the sort of player that maybe he's had two of his best games for the year already.
It's a risky pick. I can understand why people are looking at him at 260,000, but considering you've not got to benefit from those two first scores, I'd still be more likely to trade in a Christensen than a Fisher. Might be biased there.
Yeah, I think that Christensen has runs on the board.
Devin Smith, Mark, I didn't start with him, and he's actually looked pretty fantastic from the first two.
That's one of my favourite things about your team.
Yeah, no Devin Smith. That worries me. He played less midfield in the first game, and in the second game got even more mid time. And he's been one of the top scorers from Essendon over the 2 weeks. So I'm pretty nervous not having him, to be honest.
Yeah, he's actually much, much better than I was expecting. There was a whole bunch of stuff on that he did against Fremantle that you just wouldn't even notice. Like just getting his hand in and just stopping Fremantle getting clear possession away. Just real little stuff, but then also getting the possessions, hitting targets, kicking goals, reliable tackler. So heaps and heaps of reasons to like Devin Smith. Pretty happy to have just taken the gamble on that one and gone with him to start off the season. I heard that he did go in for scans today, so hopefully they were just precautionary and everything's all right with him. But yeah, pretty happy with him. Stringer, on the other hand, I kind of wish he went to Geelong.
Devin Smith, though, is a likely trade-up target for me if I restructure of a rookie in the midfield and bring Libba's money into the forward line for Langdon.
Yeah, wow.
Smith is certainly a front runner there. That pains me to say. No, he does look like potentially... I don't know. He looks pretty consistent as well. Like, I think his ability to tackle will really lift his basement as well. He seems to get quite a few points from tackling, which is good. Toby McLean would probably be the bloke that I might consider ahead of Devin Smith. I think I'm less likely to, because I have Luke Dalhouse, and I kind of feel like you want to take a punt on one or the other. But I mean, if you started McLean for the season, you'd be pretty happy, I think.
Yeah, I think that we probably dismissed him a little bit easy based on what his role would be, and I guess similar to reasons to why Dalhouse and Bont are struggling. But he has been one of the ones that have actually stood up. It'll be interesting to see how he goes with Wallace in the team. I think Wallace had 29 touches and 4 goals in the VFL on the weekend. So be interesting to see what that does to McLean's role. But McLean is all class. He is a really good player. If I had him, I'd be pretty happy. And he's probably in the consideration for a Libra replacement this week for me.
If you didn't have Smith, McLean or Smith?
Jeez, that's a hard with Smith. I started Smith for a reason.
And would there be anybody else that you have in that same consideration set? So there's quite a few forwards that have started off well. Boak, Mundy, Walters, all 99 plus. Westhoff, a hot start, Ryder down, some good points on offer. And we've got quite a few questions about Kerno, but key position forward playing for Carlton. Even if you're talented, I'm not excited by that type of profile. Any of those other blokes take
Kerno's
your fancy?
Kerno's an absolute star, so he's one that may surprise us. I mean, I think he's really low odds as a pick, but he may surprise us. I think Mundy and Boak, if it wasn't for Boak's injury concerns in the preseason and in the first couple of weeks, I think that a lot of people would have actually started him at his price and available as a forward. Mundy was awesome against the Bombers. He looks like a genuine centre-half forward, full forward that can roam up the ground. It looks really good going forward. I guess he has had durability concerns in the past and has never actually been able to put a full season of awesome form together. Walters also scored really well and looked really well. On the cheaper end, I was very strongly considering Rory Lobb last week. I know he had a really poor game on the weekend score-wise. He also had a bunch of intercept marks and just his kicking was terrible, but I think that he will come good at some point and will put a good run of scores together on the board at some point, but probably won't be taking him. There's lots of good options, mate. There's no one else that you haven't really mentioned.
Yeah, but you'd have McLean and Smith over the next rung of those guys?
Yeah, I actually would, yep. Realistically, in consideration, I would. And part of that is price. They're just that little bit cheaper.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, and that's why we put them first. My other sort of sneaky consideration is maybe taking the opportunity to bring in Robbie Gray, 111 in his first game back.
Mm. Yeah, really good second half.
All right, that wraps up this week's show, Mark. We actually went pretty long, so we won't do any further content, but I think you've got another couple of weeks off after this. Anything to leave our listeners with for this show and for the next couple, Mark?
Good luck for this weekend. I think that I would be looking to be almost starting trading now, riding through to all the buys a little bit. Like, you'd be having itchy trade fingers every single week now, I think, which is pretty cool. I was tracking for an awesome score on the weekend. I just think that, like, I was tracking way ahead of everyone, and then Sicily happened versus, like, everyone else had Mitchell or you had Selwood, and just really crunched my score in a little bit, which sucked, but still doing okay, I guess.
I think the most important thing about this side of the season is making sure your structure is right and you don't have any glaring holes in your team. It's 2 weeks of scoring. A lot of that comes down to rookie selection and captain choices and, you know, picking a player that managed to kick 8 goals like a Buddy or a Lynch. So it's too early days to get too vexed about ranking. I think our community doing well is a good sign for our overall structure, at least, Mark. So anyway, thanks for the show. Thanks for a good preseason. It seems to be paying dividends so far. Hopefully we can carry this form on. And good luck to our listeners for what is a very important week. I know we were umming and ahhing between a lot of the options, but I think a big reason for that is you need to consider your trades as a pair. You know, downgrading one area means that you need to find a way to bring that cash on field constructively in another area on ground. So hopefully we gave enough so that you can navigate through your trades. But don't think beyond the rookies as any sure thing. So that just make sure that you make the right two trades in tandem. And the main thing, as we started off the show with, is restructuring rookies and fixing glaring holes. Probably in that order. All right, and we'll catch you all next week. See ya.
See ya, guys.